Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only weekly radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, sales, and customer relations. Nationwide, advertisers spend more than $300 billion per year. How are you planning to spend your advertising dollars? Stay with us for 2 hours of entertaining marketing discussion and our special industry guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
Back on a hazy Saturday afternoon here in Houston, Texas, on Business Radio 650, The Advertising Show. Ray Schillens, Brad Forsyth, and The Advertising Show is brought to you by the Houston Business Journal, Strictly Houston, Strictly Business, and by Zoito, the future of fulfillment. Well, how you doing?
Okay, you?
Good. That's kind of different today for some reason. Huh?
What?
Maybe that's because we're listening. Are we listening off air? No?
Are we listening through the board? Well, who knows? Hey, but I know what the difference is. You got over your West Nile virus.
Yeah.
That's what
never
happened.
Felt better. Yeah. I was thirsty, though.
Well, they say a lot of fluids when you have those flu-like symptoms out there, folks.
Did you say a lot of margaritas? Yeah, okay.
Any kind of fluid.
Today is Saturday, September the 14th. Man, this month is just flying by. This was an interesting week, too. Buddy did a thing out in, Pasadena? Was it Pasadena?
Buddy Kent.
Baytown. That's close to Pasadena.
Yeah, where the air is greener, they say. Pasadena, which is where our wonderful radio station here, KIKKAM, is licensed to. So we want to be
K-K-A-M,
nice to those people.
We don't play any country hits anymore. We talk.
That's true.
Yeah.
So what was our engineer, Buddy Cantu, doing?
He was an MC of an event to commemorate and acknowledge 9/11.
So what did he do? Dress as an Arab and go over there?
No, he did not do that.
Oh,
he was
I'm
an
sorry.
MC. Stop it.
That's terrible.
Bad.
They found number 20. Did you hear about this?
Oh, they did?
The 20th hijacker, they found him.
They did?
Well, they're claiming they found him. We have to say, in case their legal counsel's listening, allegedly.
Yeah, right.
So, anyway, you can catch all that on CNN News.
Andy Borowitz is a part of this show every week. We read one of his online articles. Of course, Andy was also on NPR last weekend for 9/11. But this is kind of interesting. He had a 9/11 message for his folks. He says, there won't be a new column today. He's talking about 9/11. Out of respect for those who lost their lives last September 11th, I decided that Martha Stewart and the dueling Miss North Carolinas could keep for another day. The column will return tomorrow, the 12th. But I did want to take this opportunity to thank all of you for the tremendous support you have shown the site over the past year. It means a lot to me. Last September 11th, it was hard for me to imagine that anyone would ever laugh again or want to. Pundits seemed to agree as they famously predicted that irony was dead. 1 year later, after receiving thousands of wonderful emails from you, I learned that irony is alive and well. The worse things are, the more people seem to, want to, and need to laugh. If that's not ironic, I don't know what is. This will be a difficult day for many of you, and my heart goes out to you. Thanks again. God bless you all. Andy Borowitz, 9/11. That was a nice little thing. I wrote him a note back, too. I said, Andy, keep him coming.
Yeah. He's a talented guy. He's been on the show, of course, before, and we do feature him every week. And for those interested in subscribing to his email newsletter, it's you can go to theadvertisingshow.com, and industry links will get you there. It's also Borowitz Reports. Plural or singular?
No, singular. BorowitzReports.com.
Yeah, I talked to him about that. I said, you ought to get S and you ought to get misspellings on your name and point them all to your server and make sure that everybody that wants what you got gets there.
If you're listening online, you'll do that at theadvertisingshow.com as we stream the show globally every week, thanks to our good friends at Zoito, the future of fulfillment. And today's guest is Richard Semenik. Richard is with the American, is he president? I guess
he's a board member.
Yeah. The American Advertising Museum, the American Advertising Museum. It's in Portland, Oregon. And his website, I was looking at this, it said admuseum.org. That's admuseum.org. You see the big boy there?
Mm-hmm.
He's a flash animation. His eyes keep going back and forth, the big boy.
Yeah, not you, buddy.
I do, buddy. Yeah. No, look at that. See,
that's
the guys
cool.
go back and forth. So that's a big boy.
It's a great sight.
What did you say it was down here? It was which big boy? What was this? Kip's big boy? Okay.
Yeah, right, over there on Westheimer.
We had Manners Big Boy up north.
Yeah.
And there was Frisch's Big Boy, I think, in Detroit, and all different kinds.
Yeah.
And that's great. Wouldn't you love to have one of those in your media room?
I think they have a lot of that kind of stuff at the museum. We're going to ask Richard about that because from what I've seen, and I've received some material this week, it's quite an interesting museum, and if I ever get up that way, you can bet that I will be attending.
We used to do... The Our House, the TV show Our House. Mm-hmm. We did the voice tracks for Portland when that was on the air.
Tommy Tynan.
Yeah.
And that was Dawn Black's deal.
Yes, it was.
She was executive producer of that. By the way, on my way in, I was listening to The Arrow, and I was on a 11:36 break, and the call-in came from, and the call-in, of course, a
district air personnel.
Exactly,
right.
Out at a car dealership, Gallo Ford. She wanted everybody to know that they're, you know, if you want to trade in, they've got some of the best trade-in allowances available. And then right after she signed off, we go into a Sterling McCall Nissan Screamer. And then, of course, after that, we go into a Harley Davidson of the Woodlands.
Sterling McCall Nissan doesn't scream. Yes, they do.
That one was a screamer. I know you usually do their spots, and this did not sound like something that you would have done. This was a screamer. I didn't recognize the voice, so I do. I don't give you discredit for that.
Thank you.
That could have been the badvertising item of the week, but we're not going to do that.
We love those guys.
So we go from Gallo to Sterling. Now we're into the Harley Davidson of Woodlands. I'm thinking we're in a transportation stop set. But,
yeah.
But I want to continue here because this is interesting. We go to Foley's Red Apple Sale, which is going to be a featured advertising. No, it's not bad. It's good. And then we go to McDonald's. Then we go to XM Satellite. Great, great spot. I don't know if you've heard it. It's a guy strumming a guitar, and he's talking this copy, and then he goes take it away, sales guy, and the guy sells. It's an interesting concept.
And back to more automotive.
Well, then we go back to Goodson Honda and old Rocky, you know, putting his pitch on you.
Right.
And then we have Trader's Village. Then we have Tyson's Chicken. And then we have some promo spot for a little 15. My point is this. First of all, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 60s.
Uh-huh.
But more importantly, those three that were transportation in the beginning, you had enough other stuff there. You could have shuffled the schedule a little bit and got your automotive with some separation.
Yeah, I know.
Back in the old days, and it wasn't that far ago. You didn't even do more than one spot of a competing category within the same stop set.
That's because you ran less spots, too.
Less spots. You gave what was called competitive separation, and those days are...
We won't see them for a long time.
Yeah.
No, it happens everywhere. Not only on
of course
on the Clear Channel stations. It happens on the Infinity stations
and Cox and other stations. I guess my point is not only could you have shuffled this around and gotten some separation within the stop set. What in the world is going on with an 8-9 minute break?
Well, I think we can all relate to that, including Buddy. I mean, there used to be pride. There used to be a lot of pride in setting up these stop sets and making sure the advertisers got equitable. Distribution, the stop set sounded good.
Mm-hmm. You rejected, I worked at the station where we rejected spots.
Oh, sure, we did that all the time.
Yeah.
We used to edit spots if there was something in it that we didn't like, or we felt that the audience wouldn't like. But it's the almighty dollar, boys and girls. And bring it on.
And the question becomes, as we've had Roger Dodson with the Radio Advertising Bureau as a guest a couple times, his question and my question, I know yours is as well, Ray, what's happening with the end product and as far as the listeners? Are they going to hang around or with competing venues such as the Internet and just other media channels that are more readily available today than they were 10 years ago? Are they going to... encroach on their current audience and end up losing what they currently have as a result of maybe taking advantage of.
No, I think people get numb to it, basically.
They do.
I don't think things will change.
So the challenge is for an advertiser to have a cutting-edge breakthrough spot within a 9-minute stop set in order to stand out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or maybe the question is, are the listeners hanging around for that 9-minute stop set?
Again... They have become dulled. Their senses have become dulled. Because if they switch over to station B, they're going to hear the same thing.
That's true.
Just depends on what time of the hour it is. So it's filled up with advertising.
Have you heard the new Lawrence Marshall radio commercials where they open with a football?
No.
It's a quasi-announcer doing a... the Houston Texans are tied 7-7, and then the announcer sounds like, I think, who is that guy, Corolla, that does that in the...
Could be.
Yeah.
He's from here.
At the stadium. Anyway, the in-stadium announcer is doing this bogus announcement, and then the phone's ringing.
Hello.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what happens. And you know, and of course, Ray comes on and he tells you that, you know, you need to come to his place. And by the way, if anybody knows Ray Childress
he's a great guy.
And you want to, you know, if anybody is listening and gets word back to him that we, you know, feature his approach on our show.
Buddy's home number.
Well, I was going to tell him that, you know, you're the guy on the right and the left at theadvertisingshow.com.
Right.
And you can reach Ray at his home phone number at 281, it's out in Sugar Land, 555.
One hot.
I'll kick your ass.
Hello.
Hello. Ring, ring. Hello. I'm on the clobber line here. Anyway, it must be.
You know
work.
What they don't say? They don't say he used to, when he was in Hempstead, he used to do clobber big city prices. But since he moved over to the big city, he's
clobbering the hell out
clobber
of everybody.
Prices.
Yeah.
So,
right.
I don't know. Is he competing against himself?
Well, it's kind of talking out of both sides of your mouth, isn't it? You have to change your strategy a little bit.
Are we doing a good or a bad this time?
Well, we can do either one.
All right.
I got both.
Well, whatever one Buddy hits, we'll do. Okay. Just hit the button and we'll see which one comes up, Buddy.
Let's
That'll be fine.
And now it's time for the Advertising Show's Advertising Showcase, an outstanding example of on-target advertising for the good stuff.
Yeah.
Here's Ray and Brad.
All right.
What you got that's good?
Well, I noticed a few days ago on television, I saw in today's newspaper, and I heard on the radio, and isn't that how you're supposed to do advertising, multimedia, where the message is all, you know, the same?
Yeah.
If I were to say red apple sale to most Houstonians, what are they automatically thinking?
Well, because of the longevity of the promotion, it's always Foley's.
Exactly.
Right?
It's a good example of consistency. It's a good example of multimedia usage in a similar way. They take their TV spots, which really jumped out at me because they were clear to understand, had messages with product and price points. They were very nice, very well delivered.
As well as the radio spots.
Radios.
A great jingle.
Right.
Good delivery, good production value, very clear.
That was my other point. They started with a jingle here in the last year or so that kind of the theme is the right choice, and it used to be a generic brand building campaign, if you will. They've taken that same music bed and brought it into their sales events to be able to tie that whole thing together. Today's Chronicle ad, it's identifying its final day today for the sale, and they have some coupons in there for extra savings, which is going to drive last minute traffic to the store. They restate the offers on the cross the board percentage off on and in particular product lines that they're featuring, and they've just done a great job. So, you know, we usually feature national advertisers. I thought I'd give the local people hats off to
well,
a great
for
job
Foley's.
For Foley's.
Yeah, good for Foley's. Great store. And
consistency and clear message. What
also, today, look at that. Red Apple sale, today only, 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. What about a call to action there, huh?
It's very clear. And by the way, when they decided to put color on there, it's funny that they used A&M red.
Yeah.
No, that was the Apple red, of course. Shout out to our associate producer, Stephanie Saratelli, the biggest Aggie anywhere near the Woodlands area. Of course, she's in Kingwood, but I'm just talking while you talk with Buddy.
Communicate. We're sign language
just
here.
Just covering here.
It's Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth. This segment of the Advertising Show is being brought to you by Charles P. Young and our special guest, Richard Semenek, coming up here in just a little while. Richard is a board member of the American Advertising Museum as we stream live on the web at theadvertisingshow.com.
Business Radio 650.
We two boys without a care entertain you folks out there. That's our half happiness.
Back to the Advertising Show. You know, with the American Advertising Museum on the show today, that is one of the very first radio spots.
No kidding.
For
Tasty Bread, wasn't it?
Tasty Bread. It was also Interwoven Socks. I forget the guys who sang it.
It was the first jingle, actually, wasn't
it? Exactly. There were three spots there. So
that's really interesting. It makes me want to
Change your socks?
No.
No?
Have some bread.
Bread.
No, I don't know. It's interesting because they were all the same singers, right?
Right.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So there we go. We've got Richard Semenek as our special guest. Richard is a board member with the American Advertising Museum. It's in Portland, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
But Richard is in Montana.
Right.
Okay. He's a long drive into work.
He's
huh?
a professor at Montana State. I'm going to give you the bio, and you can read it later. But he's a professor. He's the department head. He's a hell of a guy. He's the dean of college for the School of Business at Montana State University. Unlike other professors that we've all grown to know and love from our college days, which usually from an advertising and marketing standpoint don't really have any real-world experience, unfortunately. This guy does. He's a breath of fresh air, and if you're a student up there and you're listening live online or have had the opportunity to hear him speak, he's not highfalutin academia. He's got some good stuff.
Good deal.
Yeah.
Well, this past week was 9/11, of course, and we had a lot of advertisers not advertising, some mm-hmm. special programs that ran.
Many special programs.
Did you catch any ads that caught your ear as far as good or bad?
No, not really. I think what was conspicuously absent was advertising, frankly. I didn't see much, and what little I saw just kind of scooted by me. Frankly, I did what maybe a lot of people did, which was not watch as much as I normally would because I get a little worn out on that.
Yeah.
I think you can overdo it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Emotionally, you can overdo it.
In fact, the numbers here, I've got this in front of me, Ray. CBS takes Wednesday night with 9/11 programming. CBS ranked number one among adults 18 to 49 on households of for Wednesday night. And the network rebroadcast of the movie 9/11 at 9 p.m., that's Eastern, was the highest rated program of the evening of each of the three big networks. However, and this is my point, they were very competitive on a night that had slightly lower tune-in than the night before or the same night a week earlier. So less people watch television Wednesday night on all three or four networks, if you want to include the new up-and-comer Fox, less viewership overall, 9/11. So, but cable did well. Cable had an increase in viewership. Apparently, the winner there was the Fox News cable network, no surprise. To give you some comparisons, they averaged just over 1 million viewers compared with a daily average of about 630,000. CNN was second, averaging 922,000 viewers with a normal comparison of 522,000. So people tuned more to cable than normal. People tuned less to the big three or four networks Wednesday night. And
really?
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I watched a little bit, but it is, it's almost like trying to eat a box of candy. You can't do it. You can have one piece.
Really?
That's about it. Too much. Too much. USA Today, happy birthday to USA Today. USA Today is celebrating their 20th birthday today, and it's kind of interesting because we were there. I was in Detroit at the time, and this came from Al Newharth. When they said, they sent out a little note, said, what do you think about launching a newspaper? They didn't actually have a name for it back then. You know, it would do this, 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 and this, and everybody had to, all the employees had to, to give their opinion. So that, it's kind of interesting to see what, where USA Today has come. 2.12 million circulation, about 43% of that circulation are hotel copies. I find that interesting. The original version of USA Today was a fast read. They called it McPaper. What a great idea, McPaper. And that's true. And it's kind of interesting, too, because they had an influence on some of the other papers, well, even though it took 20 years for the Wall Street Journal to
add color.
To go a little bit differently. And
they've had a huge impact across the nation on, I think, every major newspaper. They've shortened the length of stories that sometimes go on forever. And we had a guest many months ago, and his name fails me right now. Anyway, he was with the Public Relations Society of America. He was president-elect. And he was a part of the original Gannett team that developed USA Today, as I recall during that interview.
Wow.
I wonder if Buddy's having any luck there. Not luck so far.
Do you need a quarter, Buddy?
Yeah, he's still trying to get Richard Simonek on the phone. And by the way, we're going to have to make sure that we have the right phone number. So if any of our executive producers, associate producers, or other people that are friends of the show.
Possibly those people on the street corner.
Yeah.
They may have this.
Yeah, you happen to know, Richard. Send us a phone
Send
number.
Send us his phone number, yeah.
Oh, there's a number. There's a call there right there, so we'll see what that is.
Yeah, first caller number one.
Yeah, caller number one.
Sorry, we're looking for caller number 10.
What's the phrase that pays? Hey, by the way, we've talked about Jane Clayson here on the show. Remember? Mm-hmm. And she's the one that really got after Martha several weeks ago.
Yeah.
Well, apparently she may not be continuing on the early show.
Really?
Obviously, they're still working on Bryant Gumbel and trying to find his replacement, but apparently Jane Clayson is being moved over to another CBS News program, according to The Hollywood Reporter. A possible candidate to replace her is Deborah Norville. You may recall Deborah Norville.
Yeah, she got booted off, basically.
Well, she, yes, and okay. she replaced many years ago Jane Pauley and teamed up with Gumbel on the Today Show.
Yeah.
But apparently Harry Smith is one that's going to be seriously considered to replace Gumbel, which I think is a breath of fresh air. I like Harry.
Well, Harry was on there before.
He
was. Good show.
He was. So, you know, but I don't know about the chemistry between Norville and Harry Smith.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Obviously, they've done their homework on that end, but
well, they haven't been hired yet. But it's
touchdown.
We do have Richard. Okay. Good.
Hi, Richard.
Yeah.
Richard's saying hi and goes, "They can't hear me."
I'm going to have to ask Richard when we bring him on after the CNN news if he's ever heard that joke about the buffalo in Montana.
No, you don't.
No.
You don't.
Don't want to ask him about that?
No, I don't think
okay.
so.
Okay.
We'll pass on
Well,
that.
We can't say the joke anyway, so there's no sense in asking. But, you know, one of these days, we'd have a show where we just do punchlines.
I think most of our shows are like punchlines.
Like, I once knew a man named Dave.
Uh-huh.
You know, stuff like that.
That's good.
But
Richard Simonek is a board member of the American Advertising Museum. He's also dean of the College of Business at Montana State University. The Advertising Museum is in Portland, Oregon. Am I right on that? Yes, I am.
Yes, you are.
Okay.
You reported earlier that from your Borowitz report that he was going to do what? Something about the Carolinas. He was going to let the pageant go on and some other thing to
The dueling North Carolinas. That's been resolved now, too.
Right. Well, I wanted to make the point that Mitzi Climbers and apparently Rebecca Revels have worked it out, and Rebecca's going to get the gig because apparently Misty has a boyfriend in her history.
Took
some pictures.
Oh,
a little word to the wise out there for you girls wanting to have your boyfriend snap your photo. It can get you some trouble on down the road.
This is the Advertising Show, being brought to you by the Hispanic Broadcasting Corporation, Ray Shillings, along with Brad Forsyth. We'll be back in just a minute. Stay with us.
Business Radio 650.
You're listening to the Advertising Show on Business Radio 650. And now it's time for the Bad Advertising Item of the Week.
Hi, this is Andy Borowitz for the Advertising Show. And now here's this week's breaking news from the Borowitz Report.
One day after President George W. Bush accused Saddam Hussein of buying high-strength aluminum tubes used in the making of nuclear weapons, the Iraqi strongman defended his purchase of the tubes, saying that they were for his aluminum tube collection. "Ever since I was a small boy, I've been fascinated by aluminum tubes," Saddam said in an address to his nation. "They are so shiny and smooth." Saddam went on to explain that he started collecting aluminum tubes as a boy and that his aluminum tube collection is now one of the largest in the region. In addition, he said he intended to build a museum of aluminum tubes that would be the envy of all the other Arab states. In Washington, however, President Bush blasted Saddam's explanation as bogus and lame. "I'll tell you one thing," Mr. Bush said outside the UN headquarters, "Mr. Saddam Hussein is really beginning to piss me off." In other developments, the Iraqi government sent signals today that it might welcome the return of UN weapons inspectors, but only if they referred to a special study guide prepared by the Iraqi Ministry of Information. This study guide would help show the inspectors that things they think are weapons of mass destruction are actually something different entirely, according to an Iraqi spokesperson. One page of the study guide made available to the media shows a diagram of what appears to be a nuclear-tipped ballistic missile, but is actually a giant lipstick commissioned by Saddam Hussein for a proposed Museum of Giant Lipsticks in Baghdad.
This has been a special edition of the Borowitz Report from the Advertising Show. To read more from me, Andy Borowitz, or to receive daily email alerts, log on to BorowitzReport.com. This is Andy Borowitz saying, no news is good news, but fake news is better.
The most talk with the least music. Business Radio 650.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is the Advertising Show on Business Radio 650.
Yeah. Wonder how many takes that took.
Yeah, three or four at least. The Advertising Show here on the advertisingshow.com. Also here in Houston on Business Radio 650 with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. This segment of the Advertising Show brought to you by our friends at WB39 TV.
That was back when a nickel bought something.
That's right.
Hey, you know, my wife and I were discussing the other day, it was last weekend, we happened to observe this, which is, you know, these backpacks that these kids started wearing in using, I guess, in college, and it became kind of a fashion statement.
Right, right.
And then, of course, the kids many years ago, I call them the kids because you're in your late 50s and I'm in my 30s, so...
yeah, right.
No, anyway. Then the kids started wearing their hat backwards.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I think there should be an age limit on the people that are allowed to do that.
To wear their hats backwards?
Or the backpack.
Okay.
I was at a store and noticed a lady that had to have been in her 50s, and she had one of those backpacks on.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask her if she kept her Depends in there.
Oh, jeez.
No. But I thought it was kind of weird because I think, in my opinion, the age cutoff for a backpack wearer should be somewhere around 23 tops. Now, the hat, I would go a little further. I would go, if you want to wear your hat backwards, 27, 8 maybe. I was at Starbucks today. A guy in his 50s had his hat backwards. I was going to say, sir.
Maybe the guy had Alzheimer's or something.
You can't do that.
You put it on backwards.
Actually, he's probably a catcher at the softball team, took his mask off and forgot to turn his hat back around.
The backpack is better than those stupid fanny pack things. Especially when they wear them out front here with a little pouch.
Right. Well, that's people that got their ass backwards. They don't understand how the fanny pack's supposed to work.
Right. Yeah. Richard Semenik is dean of the College of Business at Montana State University. He's also founder and co-director of the college's Center for Entrepreneurship for the New West. Before coming to Montana State, Richard was head of the marketing department at Eccles School of Business and at the University of Utah. Now, Rich has consulted with a diverse set of organizations, including IBM, Leo Burnett, Premier Resorts, Printing for Less, Lego Site Pharmaceuticals, and the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam. He has co-founded two companies, both of which were ultimately acquired. He received an undergraduate degree from the University of Michigan and an MBA from Michigan State and has his PhD from Ohio State. There you go. 1999, Rich was asked to join the National Board of Directors of the American Advertising Museum. In 2000, he was asked to join the Industry Relations Board of the American Academy of Advertising. In 3000, he's going to run for president. How about that?
Of what?
Of the United States,
oh,
I think.
Wow.
So we're going to announce that today. There we go. Richard, it's nice to have you on the Advertising Show. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, it's my pleasure to be here.
Richard, I guess the obvious question before we jump into the good stuff here is when you were consulting at the Van Gogh Museum, did you get out of there with both your ears?
I did, you know, and there was originally a requirement to be on the board. You had to be fully Van Gogh, but... there was enough other things going on in Amsterdam, I didn't bother to do that.
So I assume you got to go visit Amsterdam, and you were over there on numerous occasions on the nickel of the Van Gogh Museum.
Well, I was actually, I had an appointment at a Dutch university for a year. So that's when we discovered each other, the Van Gogh Museum and myself, and that consulting went on for about 3 years.
Did you? Are you married, by the way?
Yes.
Did you ever tell your wife you're going to go window shopping, and then she said, no, not in Amsterdam.
Not in Amsterdam.
We know what's out there, and you can't buy those things.
Look, but no touch.
Well, for those people, yeah, look, but no touch. For those people that may be familiar with the Portland area, let's start off with an easy one. Where exactly is the American Advertising Museum located in Portland?
We are in a new storefront in a emerging creative part of town at the corner of Fifth Avenue and Davis Street.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the graphic design people and some of the smaller agencies are clustering in that area. Very nice part of town. We have a very nice space right on the corner there.
So no possibility of getting Davis renamed to Madison Avenue or anything like
it
that?
It would be nice.
It would be. So is there a charge for people that show up at the museum, or can you buy a membership, or how does that work?
Well, you can do both. We have memberships. The museum, to enter, it's a $5 charge, which helps us maintain our archives and the storefront. Memberships vary depending on corporate or personal memberships. I don't have the most recent listing on that, but it is quite modest. I can also say that we have a beautiful conference room in the back where several corporate functions have been held, whether they're meetings or corporate parties or retirement parties and those kinds of things, and it's a unique and different place for people to hold those kinds of events.
Mm-hmm. You also, I heard that they had a reunion, Ray, for all the people that attended the Van Gogh Museum at one time back there. They had to use a tarp. It was an ugly sight. The museum was just founded in the mid-80s, as I recall reading somewhere. Is that correct, Richard?
That's correct.
So how in the world could that be? I mean, you would think something like the American Advertising Museum would have been founded years ago.
Well, that's an interesting point. In fact, when I was asked to join the board, as you point out, just in 99, it hadn't dawned on me that, you know, the country that spends now, you know, approaching $300 billion a year on advertising and really in many ways defines what advertising is around the world, had only in 86 founded a museum. You know, some people might also ask, well, why is it in Portland, Oregon, rather than...
That's a good question.
You know, New York City or Chicago or Dallas or mm-hmm. San Francisco or L.A. or even Minneapolis at this point. And it really was, as is with many of these things, Jack Matlack was president of the Portland Advertising Federation, and he and five of his buddies in the industry who had national connections and private collections decided that this was a country that defined what advertising was and is and needed a museum. So since no one in New York or Chicago or anywhere else was going to do it, they decided they would do it.
That's very interesting. You know, I think museums in a lot of cases are often thought of as a more formal or sedate place to visit, yet advertising, at least good creative advertising, is hardly what people would consider formal or sedate. Does your museum take on a more formal approach to advertising, or is it loosey-goosey? Is it departmentalized? Give us a little indication of what one would see if they came to your museum.
Well, and as you might suspect, no, because it's an advertising museum, it's a fun and interesting place. When you walk in, the first thing you run into, you're greeted by the great big boy icon that graces many of the big boy stores. And we have one that's in absolutely perfect condition.
Mm-hmm.
He's a beautiful example. Hanging above him is an artifact of a woman in a bathing suit, stretched out in a full dive, and she's hung from the ceiling. You have a mobile gas neon sign, and then the museum winds its way through a variety of displays. We also have the Burmeshave, some of the Burmeshave signs.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
Those are original, I assume.
Original, and you want to hear the one? It's my favorite.
Please.
Statistics prove near and far that folks who drive like crazy are.
You know, you were talking about the big boy. Ray has a big boy inflatable that he drives around in his car.
But yeah, we have a Gumby inflatable. Not a big boy, a Gumby. I got a Gumby. Big old...
This 15-foot, three-dimensional fiberglass diving girl you're just talking about here?
Yes.
One of four surviving figures, they say, was mounted above the Los Angeles headquarters of Janssen Swimwear.
Right.
In 59, the image of the diving girl first became associated with the company in 1920. My goodness, when it was gracing the cover of the company's catalog, it soon became a recognized trademark. Isn't that the same thing you would see on Janssen Swimwear, too? Don't you still see that lady?
I think so.
Yeah, so the figure donated by the Janssen Swimwear display last year. That's got to be cool to see.
So, Richard, if you were to go to the museum, I assume there's a section dedicated for television versus outdoor versus radio. Is that correct?
There is.
Yeah, and so how do you go about getting, and is there a legal requirement for rights of usage for the material that you all have and feature in your museum?
Well, to a large degree, much of this is now in the public domain, and after a certain number of years pass, and I've forgotten at the moment exactly when the decision was made, but I think everything before 1950 we have the rights to, and maybe you guys have heard more recently exactly how that public domain works. I have the same issue when I write my advertising books. There are certain ads after a point in time. They're ours. They're in the public domain. They've been reprinted so many times that that permissions are no longer needed. So there's that issue, is the one of public domain. The other is that we do a very tasteful and flattering job of displaying and archiving these artifacts of advertising. So typically when we do need to ask for permission, people are quite willing to give us that permission.
Well, that's interesting. Catherine Coleman, who helped put together this interview, who is also the administrator and curator at the American Advertising Museum, was quoted in an article in the Columbian newspaper about the evolution of the December 7th, 1941 connection to up to 9/11/01, and she put together a very interesting exhibit, Ray, and I'd like to chat with
Richard. Let's talk about that with Richard here in just a minute. We're going to take a break here on the Advertising Show, streaming live on theadvertisingshow.com here in Houston on Business Radio 650. It's Ray Shellens, Brad Forsyth, and Richard Semenek, who is a board member of the American Advertising Museum out of Portland. We'll be back in just a minute.
Practical marketing advice and informative discussion. You're listening to The Advertising Show on Business Radio 650.
Never borrow money needlessly, just when you must. Borrow them when loans are a specialty from folks you trust.
Back with the Advertising Show. It's Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth, streaming live online at theadvertisingshow.com and here in Houston on Business Radio 650. Richard Semenek is a board member of the American Advertising Museum out of Portland, Oregon. Where, what's the forecast today, Richard? Is it raining in Portland? Or you're not in Portland, you're in Montana.
I'm in Montana.
It's probably snowing in Montana.
Spectacular here.
What kind of weather we have today, Richard?
We got a high of 75, low of about 40, not a cloud in the sky. It's big sky country, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
And does that mean that the national or the state sponsor is Sky Vodka? Is there any truth to that?
it could be, but I don't know that most of us Montanans are into those kind of foreign goods up here.
No. I think Sky, by the way, is it? I think it's a domestic vodka, but I wouldn't know. Ray drinks gin, and I just watch him drink. So,
right.
Before the break, we had mentioned about Catherine Coleman, who is the curator at the American Advertising Museum, and apparently this past week, Richard, an exhibit opened, and it is entitled America Then and Now, 1942-2001. Are you familiar with that exhibition, and can you tell us a bit about it?
Yes, I am, and it's really quite an extraordinary exhibit. Part of it was put together by a collector, Peter Kreitler, who'd been collecting Life magazine since the publication first began. And then Marilyn Zoidis from the Smithsonian Institution had put together United We Stand exhibit. And the American Advertising Museum, our role has been to provide some ads from Life magazine, from our archives, from the period 1942. And that exhibit has over 100 lithographs, 60 are originals from the Kreitler collection that I referred to. Mm-hmm. Plus he has some 3D World War II memorabilia. And you know, following that bombing of Pearl Harbor on December 7th, magazines across the U.S. kind of joined in an unprecedented campaign to inspire the country through the 4th of July in 1942, and each magazine would feature an American symbol, whether it was some of our military power or the American flag on its cover. So it's an extraordinary exhibit. It just did begin in on September 6th, and it will be running through December 31st. And it's it is an exhibit that at this point in time has brought together some of the amazing history of patriotism as reflected in advertising and in the media.
Did you notice any advertisers back in 42 taking a shameless profiteering approach of wanting to take advantage of a terrible, terrible time in America and do advertising in a way that unfortunately we saw examples of post 9/11. I'm not saying that it was all that way. I'm not even going to say that a majority of the advertising was that way. But you tell me, when you look back on December 7th, 1942, was it all just patriotic times a thousand, or was there a bit of that going on back then?
You know, my view, and you know, being in the industry, I hope my view isn't biased, but my view is that it really was more a patriotic spirit than the attempt to exploit the tragedies of the of that event. Now, I guess we can say that any allusion to those tragedies is exploitation, but you know, again, given that advertising is in the business of reflecting culture and the times, then it would be fairly appropriate. One that comes to mind that I think ran for quite some time, Coca-Cola used military figures, including women in uniform, for quite a while during that period. And it never struck me as exploitive.
Right.
Well, look what the country did. You've got Uncle Sam, I Want You, right, you know, right after that tragedy.
I think a lot of the
tragedy.
We had Peggy Conlon from the Ad Council on several weeks ago, and obviously the Ad Council was born out of the events of 1941 and became initially a great communicator of just, you know, wanting to keep things on track during wartime.
I think you didn't see things like that back then is because it wasn't so there wasn't the propensity of people advertising that way. You know, you had the country advertising that way,
right?
But the country can wrap itself in the flag, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
When it's a client or a business, that's not a good idea. It says the visitors will find your museum's interactive approach to the icons, slogans, and jingles of mass marketing both nostalgic and informative. So this is an interactive museum.
It is. And part of that is the complete and total accessibility of the pieces. Now, and let me clarify something. We have a relatively small storefront. One thing, we made a strategic decision as a board in early 2000 that it would be infeasible to have a 30 or 40 or 50,000 square foot gigantic museum, although I think all of us in our dreams would hope that could happen. You know, I just think we had something that looked like the Guggenheim in New York and really played this up big. But given that we couldn't afford that, we have a fairly small storefront space where you can, you know, walk right up to the big boy and go see the mobile gas neon sign and play some of the old ads, television ads from the 1950s and radio ads. But what we decided would be more appropriate is if we had a small storefront that showed some of the more classic pieces, had a timeline of the history of advertising, then kept our archives, we could, through the enormity of the archives, which includes about 3 million pieces of advertising memorabilia, we could create these traveling shows or special exhibits like America Then and Now. That is working. We want to develop touring exhibits more quickly. We want to develop special exhibits more quickly. We again, you know, suffer from, like every organization,
funding,
a crimp in our resources. But I think that's going to be the way ultimately that we can take advantage of the endowment we have called this archive and provide an historical perspective.
So that's what you have planned then? Is that what you're planning on doing?
We do. We have a couple of exhibits on tour already, and we do rotate the special exhibits like America Then and Now.
Okay.
Well, so why hasn't a Omnicom or a major agency out west, or for that matter anywhere across America, be it a big holding company like an Omnicom that is the parent company to many ad agencies that we all know by name, or any other company stepped up to the line and helped you guys out?
Well, you know, I don't know the answer to that. We've tried to have negotiations like that. We've tried to, through agencies, obtain materials from their archives. And it hasn't really worked out.
You personally been involved in that yourself?
Well, I've talked to some of my colleagues at various agencies around the country, and there's a hesitation, and I don't know if it's because they're not exactly sure how we're going to use the materials, or whether they feel that you know, there's still proprietary nature to all the materials developed, and they only want to give permission for very short periods of time. But I agree. I think that in a country that has done so much to develop what advertising is, that we should have something that looks like the Guggenheim.
Well, and you know, why in this world we live in today, where everything's consolidated from media companies to ad agencies and the like, why a major company like J. Walter Thompson or Ogilvy & Mather or whoever wouldn't enjoy having a presence at your museum is beyond me. But we're going to have some more questions for you right after the news here, Rich. So hang with us, if you would. Please.
It's the Advertising Show here on Business Radio 650, brought to you by Zoito, the future of fulfillment, and by the Houston Business Journal. Strictly Houston, strictly business. There's a big boy, Burma Shave signs, and a bunch more. The museum is located in Portland, Oregon. And Richard Semenek is a board member of the American Advertising Museum, also a dean of the College of Business at Montana State University, where he's talking to us from today, where it's crystal clear. Can you imagine that? A high of 75 and a low in the 40s? Boy, would that be nice. If you've got the time, we've got another hour's worth of programming for you today on the Advertising Show. We'll be back with more from Richard and Ray Schillings and Brad Forsyth here in just a minute. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of the Advertising Show, America's only weekly radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, sales, and customer relations. Once again, your hosts, Ray Schillings and Brad Forsyth.
It's the Advertising Show being brought to you by the Houston Business Journal, Strictly Houston, Strictly Business, and by Zoito, the future of fulfillment, live online at theadvertisingshow.com. In Houston on Business Radio 650 with our special guest, Richard Semenek. Richard is a board member of the American Advertising Museum out of Portland, Oregon. He's also a dean of the College of Business of Montana State University. And it becomes hour two now as we talk more about what goes on at that great place. Love to go there.
Yeah, I would too. We're going to save some questions for Richard and take advantage of his academic background for towards the end of the show, because I'd like to chat with him about something other than the museum. We're going to wrap up some conversation here about the museum. And the obvious question when I began this questionnaire several weeks ago, Richard, is what's the oldest advertising artifact that the museum currently owns?
Well, I think in terms of the one that I like the best and is one of the oldest, although, you know, people say that if you go back to certain pictographs, et cetera, that could represent advertising, and we have a little bit of that. We have a magazine ad from 1904 that's encouraging the colonists in Britain to move to America.
Wow.
So,
really?
It's not, you know, it doesn't have all the splash and sophistication that we use today, but, you know, it's a very interesting plea to find independence and come to the new land. So
on a carnival
1704
cruiser,
is about it.
We might ask Christine, if she would, to send us a copy of that, because we're having an executive from the MPA, Magazine Publishers of America, on our show in a few weeks. And we'd like to maybe talk about that, if Christine can do that. Of course, a copy will do. We don't need the original.
No, we need the original. We'll make a copy and send it right back to you.
Yeah, we'll be
okay.
Yeah,
no,
and if it looks different than the one you sent us, just
don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we had you on last week, Ray was asking what we needed to do to see about getting our broadcast console contributed to your museum, because if you were to see this, Ray.
Yeah, it's got these round things on it that you control the volume with. Went out in the 60s.
Yeah,
no problem.
Yeah, back when you and I were just beginning to shave and getting into the radio business, they had sliders, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
Yeah,
they did.
But we also have an artifact here in the studio. He just left. His name's Buddy Cantu. No, I'm kidding. In case you're listening, Buddy, I hope you're making it through the traffic. And by the way, Richard mentions the Big Sky Country. If you're here in Houston listening through Business Radio 650, I'd like to ask everyone to roll your window down and take a big, deep breath, fresh breath of air. Excuse me.
Really.
We have an alert going on this morning on the way into the studios. It was an orange alert, which means danger. And then we're going to move into the red category, which means puppies, old people, cats.
Birds. Don't forget the birds.
If you wheeze or anything, you go outside, you could die.
Yeah. It's a lovely day here.
Yeah, so hats off to the petrochemical community here in Houston that we all enjoy.
Mm-hmm. They had a big explosion, too, south of us here yesterday.
Was it yesterday?
Oh, yeah, yesterday.
I thought for sure that was going to be some kind of terrorist.
Right.
Come to find out you were outside that ammonia tank with a pack of matches, right?
And a cigar.
Yeah.
Doggone it.
So how does a advertising memorabilia or artifact qualify to be inducted into the Advertising Museum? Do you have any kind of system for that, Richard?
Well, Catherine, who you mentioned, who's our curator and head cook and bottle washer, everything else, accepts all those materials, and if we feel it makes an additional contribution to a category in the archive, we'd very much like to acquire that from the individual. Give them some estimate of its potential market value so they can take a tax deduction if that's important to them. We don't take everything people send us because we simply don't have the room for it.
Right.
Plus, it may be a duplicate. If it's an unusual and particularly interesting piece, we'll take duplicates. But contacting Catherine...
admuseum.org, by the way.
Right. She will make that evaluation, and we are... anxious to continue to build the archive. So anyone who's listening who feels they might have something of use, go to the website and communicate with Catherine, and she'll let you know whether we want to take a look at it.
At the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, they have a bunch of radio hosts from around the country. You can go to a kiosk and hear some of those types of things. How do you set up your broadcast, your radio broadcast memorabilia?
We have a little kiosk, and you can. We try to put together some historic broadcasts as well as some of the great ads. In fact, you've been playing some of those today that we also have in the museum.
Mm-hmm.
We have the same thing with television advertising.
Yeah,
you can go up to a kiosk and play television ads from the 50s through the 70s, and we always have running at another kiosk the Clio award winners from the current year. So we have the 2002 Clio award winners running right now.
Do you have them from previous years as well, too?
Yes, we do. We have those all archived, and
we'll take a second.
And can call those up as well.
Mercury Awards Radio, do you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that sounds interesting. Well, staying with the I'm going to have to talk to Catherine, Ray, next week to talk about getting, you know, here we are on the radio, and she sent me two video cassettes of television commercials. But I must tell you, in looking over these TV spots, what I was reminded of, Richard, is a day and a time back in the 50s and 60s when advertising was not only simpler, but it was actually more clever, I think, due to its simplicity. I'm wondering if... Is that a reflection of the less sophisticated consumer of the time? Is that a reflection of a greater level of creativity that was happening back then versus now? What's your take on that?
Well, I think that we get fascinated as individuals in this country, period, but also in the ad industry, maybe even more particularly with technologies, with gizmos, and so we can fall victim to relying on the technology to carry a message rather than some extraordinary creative thought. I'd hesitate to say that ads in the 50s and 60s on television were more creative. I think as a new medium, everything seemed extraordinary. I don't know if you remember in the 1960s, Chevrolet ran an ad, it was Hertz. They were using a Chevrolet vehicle, where they had the husband and wife come down from the sky and then land in the car. That was just seen as so extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
Now when you look back at it, it looks like a scene from Lost in Space as opposed to Star Wars. But
it was dangerous, that's for sure.
Things struck us as extraordinary. And I think when we look back historically, we think about the fact that that must have been really creative back then. Mm-hmm. So it strikes us as creative now as well.
Well, I guess also when you think about it, some of the TV spots that I was thinking about when I was making that point, Volkswagen, for example, the Doyle Dan Bernbach campaign did an outstanding job. And, of course, I guess the point is, Ray, the crap that went on back in those days, they're not going to retain that, right? They're not going to send tapes around and say, hey, look at this crap. Now, the other issue is I'm wondering if in the American Advertising Museum, if you had any advertising, because you brought up Hertz, that had OJ in it that went out the back door a few years back.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we have some artifacts of that. I don't recall that we have any featured at the moment.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. In the category of strange and unusual, Ray's wearing a pair of Speedos in the studio today with an ad on the back. And I don't want to get into what we're selling as far as his ad, but it does involve Fritos. I'll just mention that. But is there a category of strange and unusual advertising that you feature at the museum?
We don't do that. And I personally, that would be one of my favorites. I have this file I keep and have kept over the years on bad advertising.
Bad advertising?
Yeah, we wouldn't want to ever call it bad, but strange and unusual is, mm-hmm. is nicely put.
Mm-hmm.
But we have not put together either a permanent part of the museum featuring strange and unusual advertising, nor have we put together a traveling show or a special exhibit on that. It would be worth doing for sure.
Mm-hmm. It would. And Ray's making note of your address right now to be sending in that pair of Speedos if you ever decide to do that.
Actually, come to Houston and you can get your share of good advertising.
Hang it from the ceiling like they do the strange professional angel. Sports championship banners.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Reliant Stadium next week, not this week because the Texans are out of town, but I think next week they're planning on doing that, Ray. It'll be a very small flagpole.
right.
Before we take a break, one final question that's kind of off the subject of museum, but again, wanting to take advantage of your background as dean of college at the School of Business for Montana State University. What are the kids today thinking about advertising that you see that are deciding to get into this field? We hear so much about Generation X and Y and that these young folks today are not buying into traditional advertising approaches and that there's a unique way in order to reach these young folks. I'm curious as to when these individuals grow up and become a part of the advertising community and be part of the creative team, is there going to be a disconnect between the way advertising has been created in a traditional way versus this hard-to-reach, hard-to-understand youth of today?
Well, there could be, and we see a little bit of that now. I was doing a seminar the other day, and some of the participants brought up the new Target Stores campaign.
Mm-hmm.
You familiar with that campaign?
Oh, yeah. We've reported on that campaign here on the show, and we find it outstanding.
The feeling is that the evolution has been, you hear some people refer to the use of technology for quick edits and fast-paced ads to the, you know, kind of the MTV era of advertising is one way it's referenced. And these kids are very savvy. They're technologically adept. They live in an extremely fast-paced world, and you'd have to believe that they're going to bring that to the table or the, you know, the editing board or whatever. And one of the things I do find, though, is that there's a little bit of an intimidation in this group of students where it's not that they don't think they can do it, but there have been some extraordinary achievements in the industry. And so it's a fairly daunting task. You know, back in the 50s, everything was new. There was no historical precedent. There were no famous works to try to compete with. Now there's, of course, a huge history of that. So there's a little bit of intimidation, but they're very adept at the new technology, and they know what they like.
It's interesting. 20 years ago, when I first got into the agency business, it was a young man's business or woman's, and I think the baby boomers that grew as I was a part of that generation, as Ray is, and you are, Richard, we became part of the mainstream, and it was, you know, it was not required to be young to be in the advertising business because you were a part of the largest market available from a consumer standpoint. And yet we hear today about how if you're going to reach the youth of today, young people need to be the ones developing the advertising. So I think a lot of what you said reflects that. After the break, I'd like to jump into what your take is on the network programming you saw on 9/11, and we'll talk about that after this.
Advertising Show, streaming live online at theadvertisingshow.com. This segment of The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Charles P. Young, along with Ray Schillings, Brad Forsyth. Stay with us.
And now, it's time for the Wacky World of Marketing. Wacky World of Marketing. Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update for this week heads to Tokyo, where the Japanese enterprise of paying strangers to come to private homes, pretend they're the occupants' relatives, and exchange family gossip was reported by our wacky news crew a while back. Now, apparently the business is still booming. According to an August Miami Herald dispatch from Tokyo, the convenience agency supplies, quote-unquote, friends for weddings and funerals and even to sit at college lectures to keep a professor's spirits up. Recent wedding party friends of one bride, who were paid about $500 each, were given detailed biographies of who they were to pretend to be so as to mingle more interestingly with the bride's actual relatives. Now get ready for some news with Flash. Playboy TV debuted The Weekend Flash, featuring naked anchor women. Playboy says their three anchors will provocatively disrobe while reading the headlines. Playmate Kit Pomodoro says doing TV news in the buff seems like a natural progression. She notes that she reads the newspaper in the nude every day. The Weekend Flash will air Friday, Saturday, and Sunday evenings on the Playboy TV cable channel. The Internet gets a new spin. Spin cycle, that is. The Internet currently produces a lot of filth. Now it's helping to eliminate some. IBM, USA Technologies, and several colleges and universities have teamed to fight, well, dirty laundry. The two IT vendors have linked 9,000 washing machines and dryers at U.S. college campuses to the Internet, so students can reserve machines, check on their wash's progress, even add soap or fabric softener from their dorm rooms via a website. When a load is done, the machine sends an email to a computer or a pager. The eSuds program will run on an intelligent network linking the washers and dryers to the Internet. Laundry owners can monitor machines' performance online, which could mean fewer out-of-service machines. The system even makes paying easier, since students can pay at the machines with a microchip-equipped ID card or remotely using a cell phone to access an account. Students, though, will still have to remove the clothes from the washer and put them in the dryer. Oh, school is such a grind. And that, my friends, is the Wacky World of Marketing.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and, unfortunately, the true Wacky World of Marketing. Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth are talking to you about marketing strategies. You're listening to The Advertising Show on Business Radio 650.
Give way to your heart, your spirit, go.
With Northwest Air. You fly as you've never flown before.
Back with you, the advertising show. It's the Northwest Orient Airlines jingle from way back when. And it's this segment of the advertising show being brought to you by the Hispanic Broadcasting Corporation. Live online at theadvertisingshow.com. We're also here in Houston on Business Radio 650. The advertising show has a special guest today. His name is Richard Semenik, board member of the American Advertising Museum. That is located in Portland, Oregon, actually on 5th Avenue in Davis in Portland. Also online if you want to find out more about that at admuseum.org. And of course, many people say it, O-R-G. Right?
Yeah, O-R-G. Well, that's what Richard did when he was over in Amsterdam.
Org.
Yeah. And by the way, Richard is where? In Montana, right?
Okay, didn't bring him off hold. Hang on just a minute. There we go. You're back.
It was filmed here.
There you go.
Where are you in Montana again?
Livingston, Montana.
Livingston, Montana. If I were to say, do you remember the old joke, I'm a buffalo in Montana? That's the punchline?
I don't remember that.
Okay,
joke.
Well, good. You're not going to hear it.
No, you can't hear
too
it.
Bad.
This entire station would be off the air within a matter of minutes. But
yeah.
In case you had, I just wanted to give you the punchline. Before the break, I wanted to chat with you, and now we have a few moments. And by the way, Richard's graciously agreed to stay after the bottom of the hour for 5-10 minutes, so we will keep him on for an illustrious bonus 10-minute time. And then, of course, we have coming up at the end of the interview three semi-personal questions, which is my favorite part.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And by the way, Ray's wearing his hat backwards, if anybody's paying attention.
Right.
Before the break, we were going to ask you about the 9/11 network programming. Did you catch much of it, Richard? And if so, what did you think of it? And advertisers, did you observe any? And your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I actually did. In fact, I started the prime time on September 10th because I wanted to see whether there would be any buildup. Then I caught both the network feeds East Coast and West Coast early in the morning and later the prime time of the day of September 11th. And, you know, I was interested to note that I saw virtually nothing attempting to play off the moment, play off the tragedies of last year.
Right.
And I watched, I mean, I took notes. AT&T, these are ads, AT&T, Nissan, Sudafed, Hyundai, Washington Mutual, Flonase, Mitsubishi, Circuit City, Ross, Sizzler, Kia, Albertsons, you know, on and on and on, Target. There wasn't even the issue of closing an ad with "we'd like to recognize and respect the contributions of people, you know, around this." You know, there wasn't even the attempt to go there. So
which is
I
good.
Found it pretty subdued.
Yeah, and we've been saying for some weeks here on the show that if you're an advertiser and you have a campaign or a flight in place and you're going to be running 9/11, there's no shame in continuing that. Business as usual, as far as we're concerned. It only becomes a bit shameful when you try to capitalize on that situation.
Right.
What I did notice, Richard, and I'm sure you did as well, the networks tended to take a little bit of that acknowledgement of as far as on their own time.
Right. Especially, you know, the ad station breaks.
Right.
Paying tributes. That was even true here with some of the local broadcasting out of Billings and Bozeman, Montana.
Mm-hmm. Did you, since you brought up the what size market is the closest large city to you? I guess that would be Billings?
It is, and you may be stunned when I tell you this, but Billings is a market of 80,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
That's the largest in Montana.
Wow.
The entire state has 800,000 people.
My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the compelling statistics about Montana, there is one student per square mile in the state of Montana.
Hmm.
And there are 56 counties in Montana, and 28 of them do not have a stoplight.
No kidding.
Well,
during our pre-interview a few days ago, you gave an interesting geographical way of viewing Montana. Would you repeat that, Richard?
Sure, I'd be glad to, especially since you are in Texas. If you are in the furthest southeast corner of Montana, you are closer to the state of Texas than you are to the northwest corner of Montana.
Okay.
We're talking some heavy driving, guys.
That is.
Is that the home of the Teddy Roosevelt National Park?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
And by the way, when they say they have one student every square mile, that includes preschool, kindergarten, junior high.
That's right.
Yeah.
Hey,
we're gonna have to take a break here, Richard, but we do appreciate you sticking around for a little while longer. And we'll talk about the traveling exhibit as a centerpiece for celebration for the advertising and marketing community. Richard Semenik is our special guest. He is a board member of the American Advertising Museum, and we hope you can stay with us here on Business Radio 650. This segment of the Advertising Show is being brought to you by WB39TV. Did you have something you'd like to add to that?
Not really.
Okay, well then don't.
Okay.
That'll be good. We'll be back. Stay with us at AdvertisingShow.com as well. It's all about advertising. We're right here.
Buck starts here. Business Radio 650.
To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show on Business Radio 650.
The Hinckley and Schmidt Water Lilies.
A one, a two, a three. I drink your water.
We had to get those guys to do a jingle for the show. I think it'd be great, don't you?
If they use the top hat.
The Hinckley and Schmidt. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I think you ought to get a swing band.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody loves swing.
Well,
yeah.
We have one, but they don't play any instruments. They're just swingers.
Richard Semenik is our special guest today. He's a board member of the American Advertising Museum. It's out of Portland, Oregon. And there is a traveling museum as well.
Yeah,
what is that all about?
Well, we just received an email, by the way, Ray, from the Ad Club of Kabul, and they were curious as to how they might be able to get an exhibit over there. I told them I think this is U.S. only, so they're going to, thus the name American Advertising Museum. They need to get their own. And so they started forming down there by the bazaar, the Afghanistan Advertising Museum, and they said they've got artifacts blown all over the place that they're going to be able to pick up over the next several weeks. But
literally pick up off the ground, right?
Exactly.
Right.
They, in fact, one guy, when he emailed me, he put a little note. Does a carving on a rock qualify as an ad?
Sure it does.
Sure it does.
Sure it does.
Of course it does, especially when it says camels, two for one.
Yeah, right.
So let me ask you, Richard, if any interested parties out there, be it listening through our website at theadvertisingshow.com or here locally in Houston, were interested in being a part of the traveling exhibit and acquiring that over a period of time, what period of time would they be able to have that exhibit, and how do they go about getting it?
Well, we typically have folks that, and let me tell you, what places the exhibit, there are actually two of them, I'll talk a little bit about each, shopping malls, corporate lobbies, chambers of commerce who set it up somewhere in a town to, you know, as a community event. We've had the exhibits stationed for as short as a two-week period of time, which is probably the minimum you'd want to have it, to as much as 6 to 8 weeks. I think it was in the lobby. One of them was in the lobby of the Procter & Gamble headquarters in Cincinnati for 8 weeks. Which brought together the community and for the benefit of the employees there.
Hmm.
So they're terrific exhibits. Let me talk about both of them, if I could, for a couple minutes.
Sure, please.
One is called Advertising Comes of Age, The History of American Advertising, 1920 to 1969. And we really picked that era or those decades because it really represented a phenomenal episode in the history of America in terms of the introduction of products, significant changes in our culture with people, with the end of World War II and the development of suburbia, lots of technology being introduced into the marketplace. So we break it into those decades, the 20s, which we call the sophisticated soft sell, 1930s, hard times and hard sell, 1940s, Madison Avenue goes to war, the 50s, selling suburbia, and the 1960s, the creative revolution. And I really like the way we've got this set up. We set it up as a series of slogans and characters. So from the 1920s, we introduce you to the UNITA Biscuit Boy, Mr. Peanut, who was actually created by a 13-year-old who won $5 for his winning entry in a 1916 contest to a peanut company. The Campbell Soup Kids, in the 1930s, we had Elsie the Cow come on the scene, Betty Crocker, the Flying Red Horse Pegasus for Standard Oil. In the 1940s, Smokey the Bear made the scene, Rosie the Riveter. It's a fun exhibit. It really highlights a very dramatic period of achievement in this country.
Hmm. And you said there were two of them.
And the other one's called The Dream Girls, Images of Women in Advertising from the 1890s to the 1990s. And one of the reasons we put together this exhibit is because women represent such an important part of American consumption culture. It's still true that women are responsible for about 85% of all household purchases and decisions. So, we're still very dependent on women and their insights. We have over 550 different advertising pieces that are part of this exhibit, this traveling exhibit. And we try to feature some of the more famous spots, both in print and in media, television, most specifically. Mm-hmm. But it really is a not just an advertising history, but also sort of a fashion history of women and certainly their role in commerce. So it's a fun exhibit. Again, 2 to 8 weeks is probably the appropriate time to have an exhibit like this. And, it comes in big boxes and recommendations for how to display it.
And you can either call the museum or go online to find out more about that.
Exactly.
The number is
Catherine can help you, decide just exactly what you need and how you can take best advantage of these amazing artifacts.
Do you offer any reproductions of some of the things that you have on display at your museum?
I don't know that we have any formal process for that. I think we receive requests, and Catherine's able to provide a digital reproduction, either by photograph or scanning it. But I don't know. I don't think we have that formalized. We're hoping that some of the bigger ad programs around the country, we could end up with some interns who could dig into our archive and come up with their own ideas about what would make a great special display, what would make a great traveling exhibit, and use some of that, like you talked about earlier, that young creative energy to help us take advantage of everything we do have in archive.
Well, local trade org folks, if you're listening, it's a great exhibit. I'm holding in front of me here a piece of paper that describes the how and when and where that you can go about this. Frankly, I am surprised, and I'm going to go out on a limb and go ahead and say this, Richard. It's with regard to budget and what it cost, it's a few thousand dollars. It's not
That's
that
all,
much.
Huh?
And yeah, as Richard said, it's shipped, and I will leave the quoting of prices and all of that to Catherine and the fine folks at the museum. But there are many success stories that they've had with these traveling museums. But Kansas City celebrated the Ad Club's 90th year and got involved with that and had the exhibit there. Cincinnati, WGRR Radio, you might remember that, Ray, was one of the sponsors for the Cincinnati showing, Dayton, Ohio, Albuquerque, and, of course, in Davenport, Ohio, it was such a big hit.
Davenport, Ohio?
I'm sorry, Iowa.
Iowa, yeah.
Okay. Davenport, Iowa.
It was such a big hit, they moved it to Ohio.
It was such a big hit, they took the exhibit out on the Mississippi there and just floated it down to New Orleans.
Right.
No, I don't know what they did there, but it's obviously something that I would encourage any and all business-related orgs, trade orgs out there. Really, it would be a great feature for your organization.
Yeah, the feedback we get is it's so different from anything that has shown up in town before that the community or the employees get really excited about it.
We would only ask that the trade organization invite Ray and I to the event and make sure and mention that you heard it here on the Advertising Show. And you know what you get as a result of that?
a mention on the show.
10 cents off the original offer.
Oh, good.
So
this is free.
Yeah. We're coming now to my favorite part of the show. It's a regular feature here on the Advertising Show. We call it three semi-personal questions. We have five questions ready, Ray, for Richard.
Yeah.
But we give him the opportunity to pass on two, but we ask him one at a time. So we're going to start that right off here with my first question, Richard. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. The following slogans, good to the last drop, thank you for your support, or put a tiger in your tank. Which of those three, which one of the three, do you think would work best for a local sperm bank?
Well, now, that is let's go through those again.
Good to the last drop, thank you for your support, or put a tiger in your tank.
Let's go with put a tiger in your tank. I think that shows the most energy, the kind of positive forward thinking.
It's the more it's the more tasteful of the three, too.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And the only reason you could have chosen thank you for your support is if you had another person in there with you when you were giving your
donation,
your specimen, yes. Right. Question number two, and again, you can pass on any of these. I'm going to try to go to the hardest three to begin with. Hardest, more challenging, I should say, Ray, coming off that last question. You and I and Ray all went to college around the same time. So while you were in college, were you more of a bong, a pipe, or a zigzag guy?
Oh, wow. You know, I was at the University of Michigan, so I'll let that question answer itself.
Okay. Well, no, that could be a pass. Are you passing?
No, I pass.
Okay. Let's go to...
I can't remember whether to pass.
Well, there you go. Now, my follow-up question is, did you inhale?
You drank Labatt's, okay?
Strohs.
Yeah, there you go. Strohs. We all remember Strohs. I'm gonna go with an open-ended one because we usually get good reactions to this question. What would your students or faculty members be most surprised to learn about Richard Semenik?
Well, I think the fact, and I've got some actual photos here. When I was head of the marketing department, you alluded to that. I used to come to work on a vehicle I bought in 1960, which was my 1952 Chop Harley Panhead. And the students here, I think, would see that as fairly unusual for their dean.
Right.
Yeah, no kidding.
You were you would be like the guy on the back of the motorcycle during, what was that, you know the movie I'm speaking of.
What, with the
Fonda? Easy Rider.
Yeah, Easy Rider,
yeah.
And those were both Panheads, engine configurations,
exactly.
The Easy Rider motorcycle.
Easy Rider, not Easy Wider, Ray.
No, Easy Rider.
Yes.
I said that.
Okay.
Right.
Well, Richard, you answered all three. Well, did we get a third one, or do we need a third one?
No, we need a third question.
We do need a third one.
Question.
Okay. Have you ever had a student hit on you, and was it something you were receptive to, and what grade did they get?
You know, that's amazing. You hear about college professors who talk about all the time. I've never been hit on by a student.
Really?
I mean, it's, I guess, sort of an admission of lack of sex appeal or whatever.
Well, that's true.
Never happened to me.
Well,
I think most of that's a big myth.
Well, that's good advice for Ray, who keeps hanging around the University of Houston campus.
Right.
Portraying to be a...
Talking Montana.
Portraying to be a college professor, handing out A's right and left.
Richard had a buffalo hit on him one time.
For sure. My wife got caught there. She's a fishing guide and a fly casting instructor up here.
No kidding.
She parked her Chevy Suburban, in a field there where there's a beautiful private spring creek. And all the cows came up to her car and started licking it. You know, so she ends up with this car full of cow spit, and it took forever to get it off. But no, never been attacked by a buffalo, but have been attacked by a bunch of cows.
Well, it's been a joy having you on the show. And by the way, if you're ever up in Montana, since they only have one student for every square mile, if you see one standing out in the field, you might want to tell them which way to go for the school. And if your wife would quit driving those vehicles that have that salt lick flavor to them, it'll probably quit attracting those cattle to your... wife's car. Thank you so much, Richard, for joining us, and you've represented the American Advertising Museum quite well, and it's been a great joy having you on the show, and we appreciate
it.
Thank you, Richard.
Go online at admuseum.org. You can also call them, by the way. Here's an easy number to remember. It's 503-226-0000. Or uh-oh.
Like or just one long O.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Yeah. It's Ray Schillen, Brad Forsyth, and we are back here in just a minute with more on theadvertisingshow.com and Business Radio 650. Stay with us.
Quick Takes on Sales and Customer Relations with Jeffrey Gittimer, nationally syndicated columnist in the network of City Business Journals and other great publications worldwide. If you're offended by common sense commentary, don't you dare listen. Now, here's Jeffrey.
Risk failure. There's an old expression that says, no risk, no reward. I say, no risk, no nothing. All creative people take risks. It's the nature of the process. Daring to think something new or try something new. The best example of creative failure I can give you is Thomas Edison. He's also the best example of creative success. He thought, he studied, he tried, he risked, he failed thousands of times, and he succeeded big time. Thousands of brilliant inventions and ideas, and tens of thousands of failed ideas and inventions. Wherever your creativity takes you, risk comes along for the ride. It's a natural part of the process. Enjoy the thrill of it, like you would a roller coaster ride. Hey, if you fail to get a hit in baseball 2 out of 3 times for 20 years, you'll go to the Hall of Fame with a .333 batting average, baby. There's nothing more fulfilling than seeing your idea put to use. No matter how small or grandiose, people tend to brag, be proud of, and take ownership of their idea. Hey, you see that over there? Yeah, I thought of that. Even if it's just moving something from one end of the room to the other, or setting up a new configuration of the same equipment, or creating a slogan, there's huge pride in seeing your idea.
Quick takes on sales and customer relations from The Advertising Show, the only radio show in America featuring Jeffrey Gittimer as a regular weekly guest. To learn more about his books, tapes, CDs, and speaking engagements, log on to Gittimer.com, Gittomer.com. And tune in next week when we'll hear Jeffrey say,
this is Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you that if no one responds to your ad, it may be because your ad sucks.
The station to listen to if you want to be a millionaire. Business Radio 650.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsyth on Business Radio 650.
Eastsiders, Westsiders, even rushing subway train riders, they chew it, double mint gum.
Yes, sirree. Get your pack of double mint gum out, huh?
Yeah, well, I've got 3 semi-personal questions for you, Ray, coming up here.
No, I'm not going to answer them. No. Pass, pass, and pass.
Okay? Well, that was the answer to the first question. Pass. How's your kidney stone?
Pass. How'd you win the game at the Super Bowl last
pass.
Year? Pass. Let's see. What else do we have? What do you do when you go when you're behind a slow car? Pass.
How was your bowl of chili the other day?
Pass. Anyway, the admuseum.org seems like a really cool place. The ad community here in Houston should pick up on something like that. That would be a neat idea to have
or
something
the
going on there.
Business marketing folks, those people that claim to help out the marketing
next
ad
time,
community.
The next time that we do the marketing expo, we should have those folks at the expo. That would be a really cool
thing
to do.
You're absolutely
and you can
right.
pay for it.
Hopefully we'll get a discount.
Hey, we mentioned before that it was the 20th birthday of USA Today, mm-hmm. which it really seems incredible.
It really does.
Like yesterday they came up with that.
That's such a silly name, too, because when you say yesterday, today, or
USA Tomorrow.
Or when you say in today's USA Today.
But it's also somebody else's 20th birthday. At least that's what we'd like her to believe, okay?
Who's that?
I think her name is Laura Forsyth, I think.
My wife?
Yes.
Well,
that
she's
lady?
Not 20. She's...
Okay, 21.
She's having her third annual 39th birthday.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that makes her 42.
Okay.
And, of course, yes, it is her birthday. And, you know, thanks for reminding me, Ray. Oh, oh my goodness, I got to go shop. No, I've got everything in line, everything set up.
You're going to be at Pecos tonight.
No.
We're not going to be at Pecos
tonight.
No,
I'm not going to say where we are, but we will not be at Pecos. We're going to be somewhere where you drink wine out of a glass.
Wow.
Yeah, we're going upscale.
Wow. Holy cow.
So I'll have the wine out of the glass.
No plastic silverware?
Well, I will say pass the chips. No, we're going to a nice sit-down restaurant where you actually have people wait on you. Not that Pico's doesn't have people waiting on you. But
or it's a nice restaurant.
Or that it's not a nice restaurant.
Talk your way out of that one, pal.
This is one of these places where you probably need to have a jacket on.
Good. Pants, too?
No, I didn't say that.
Okay. That's
no.
great.
No.
Hey, this is something that the ad community does constantly. They want to negotiate rates, but only do it on a short-term basis.
Right.
Well, Kmart's into that now, and for a good reason, because they don't have any money. Kmart, out of Troy, Michigan, has asked at least one network to give it more short-term flexibility to cut media buys, plus get a good rate.
Cut them and get a good rate.
Yeah, so in other words, and the guy says, we're taking it under consideration. They'll take the money.
I don't know if you've read this, Ray, but Levi Strauss is soon going to be launching a new line of jeans, specially made for anxious cell phone users. So say hello to radiation reducers.
Oh, give me a break.
I'm serious. The latest Dockers S-Fit jean will include a cell phone and a radiation-reducing lining. Now, how they came up with this is that Levi's is playing on the old consumer fear of the unknown, but the company did not make it public about any of the details that surround the radiation-reducing substance that they would go for, so far as saying that the lining is 97% cotton and 3% a mystery substance. This is one of these deals where...
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Truth is harder to believe than fiction, but the plans to roll out the jeans are in Europe only for 2003, and last year Levi's introduced a jean jacket, which had a built-in MP3 player in the cell phone, and the company says that the customer feedback about the product helped prompt the launch of the line pants. So I guess, you know, you could argue when we had Fusion 5 Patrick Mayer on a few weeks back, listen to your consumers. They will tell you about new product development and where you need to go with it. Now, you and I are not a candidate for radiation reducers, but we would like some reducers, but not in the radiation area. But, it's interesting. So, you know, when you are in Europe next time and you see the S-Fit jeans, just realize that put those on and you will be radiation protected.
Well, whoop-de-doo.
Yeah.
Kmart is back here with a pitch to Hispanic marketing with a lifestyle and entertainment magazine. They're launching that next week. It's called La Vida, Kmart's most recent move to tap the $452 billion Hispanic consumers spend annually in the United States. So, and they're going to test market that here in, is it going to be in Houston? I think it might be in
Houston. Well, I saw a list on there, and Houston was absent, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Kmart shut a lot of stores down here.
Why
they wouldn't be in Houston with that is beyond me.
I thought I saw something, I know, exactly. I thought I saw something that said, maybe it was something different. Let's see, Martha Stewart, well, she's still hanging around, isn't she?
Yeah.
Martha's taken the fifth, so as a result, the committee that's... looking into this,
SEC,
has written
to the
Justice Department requesting a criminal probe of lifestyle pushing mogul.
Mm-hmm.
Lifestyle publishing mogul, I should say. She's pushing, though.
Yeah, well, and she's taking a fifth, and she's probably drinking a couple fifths, trying to get away from all that. JCPenney, official retailer of the Dallas Cowboys, for all you cowboy fans out there, has unveiled its Emmett-O-Meter. Emmett-O-Meter. What am I talking about, Ray?
An emmetometer?
Well, it could be that. That's even a better word for it. I'm surprised they didn't consult you on that. Over Texas Stadium to honor Cowboys running back Emmitt Smith. For those in the know, of course, you realize that he's close to breaking a record, but I'll just read it as it appears here. The giant billboard features a 16-foot image of Smith that is counting down the yards he needs to break Walter Payton's all-time NFL rushing record, which is 16,726 yards. He began the season needing 540, of course, last week, the 19-10 loss to the Houston Texans did not get him far.
I've heard of them.
Yeah, but anyway, after Smith breaks the record, the billboard will be transformed into a congratulatory note to Smith and remain above the stadium until season's end. I don't know about you, Ray, but prior to the Texans coming in this season, and after the Cowboys, after the Oilers went up to Holler. What do they call that? Holler Nation up there, Tennessee, whatever.
Right.
I had a new team every week. It was whoever was playing the Dallas Cowboys. That was who I was rooting for.
And we don't have time to talk about the fact that there may be a Hooters airline. Actually, a Hooters airline. They're taking over a bankrupt Kansas City, Missouri-based Vanguard Airlines. Can you imagine what kind of service you get on Hooters?
I will tell you this.
Airline?
If their attire... is any similar to it is in the restaurants,
yeah,
you'll be scooted down in your seat because you're just right up underneath there. Ooh.
Jonathan Ressler is our special guest. Jonathan Ressler, Jonathan Riesler. They'll both be here next week. President of Big Fat Productions out of New York on the 21st here on the Advertising Show. That ought to be a great show,
it's
too.
It's going to be a high-caloric show.
That's true. So just work out before you listen to the show and drink lots of bottled water.
He's an interesting fella.
The Advertising Show on Business Radio 650.